Well, no one wants to think about the bad what ifs in life. No one also wants to leave their family financially shattered if something unexpected happens. But is life insurance really worth it? There's a lot of factors to consider when choosing a policy and whether or not you should get one at all. Here to tell us more is Benjamin Felix. He's an associate portfolio manager with PWL Capital and the blogger behind Common Sense Investing. He joins us from Ottawa. Hello there.
Hello, Bruce.
Who needs life insurance? And I'm going to expect that you will give me your most objective answer possible, because if your prime source of income was selling life insurance, I bet it would be different than the one you're going to give me now.
That's right. And that is not my primary source of income. Anybody that has dependents relying on them financially needs life insurance for their family to be financially secure. People that don't have life insurance but do have financial dependents, they may still be fine, which is the whole point of insurance, I guess, but they may also not be fine. And if something ends up happening to them, their family can be in a lot of trouble.
And so the inverse, who doesn't need life insurance? If you don't have dependents and you're, you know, single on your own, can you avoid a policy altogether?
Yeah, I think if there's no one depending on you, if you die, as sad as it may be for your family, if they weren't depending on you financially, for example, your parents who may be financially independent themselves, if you're a young adult and you pass away, no one's going to be hurt financially. So in that case, you probably don't need life insurance. Likewise, the parents in the example that I just gave who are financially independent, if either spouse passes away, if they were already financially dependent based on their assets or pensions, then they probably didn't have much of a life insurance need.
So we're going to play out this example of someone who does need life insurance. They do have dependents. How do you begin the calculation on how much you need?
The method of calculating varies, and the assumptions that are used are going to vary, and they'll have a probably meaningful impact on the end result. So I'd say that's a little bit subjective, but at a basic level, it's taking the amount of income that needs to be replaced and figuring out how much capital, how much money would be needed by your dependents today to replace that income for X number of years. Say it's 20 years or 15 years, depending on the family situation.
And how do you factor in two income earners in a family? More and more, both people are working their tail off just to pay the mortgage. How do you figure out how to account for that and acknowledge that there can sometimes be a big difference in income? Do you insure only the higher earning spouse? Do you insure both? How do you think through that?
I would look at the total expenses of the household and figure out how much each spouse is contributing to the budget. So if there's one substantially higher earner who could feasibly maintain all of the household expenditures, maybe there's an argument that the lower income spouse does not need to have life insurance. On the other hand, if the lower income earning spouse was, for example, saving all of their income towards retirement, then the death of that spouse would still have a long-term impact on the family's financial outcome. So there may be an insurance need, but the insurance need for the higher earning spouse is most likely quite a bit higher than for the lower earning spouse.
There are two basic types of life insurance: term insurance and permanent insurance. Term is simpler. It is cheaper on a monthly basis. What circumstance does permanent insurance make sense? When you're adding that layer of, you know, the investment element to it, who does that make sense for?
I would say it's a very unique situation where somebody has more capital than they're going to need to spend themselves, than they're going to need to spend themselves in their lifetime. And they want to plan for either a gift, a charitable gift on death, or a specific expense if they know they're going to have a tax bill of a specific dollar amount, or they want to leave a very specific amount to their children, life insurance is a way to guarantee that, permanent life insurance. As an investment, which I think it's often sold as to younger families, I don't think it's a great investment. It's not liquid. The returns, if you can call them that, in the policies are not great. And they're very expensive in terms of the cost of insurance.
What should the consumer know about how a life insurance broker is compensated? Because there's a pretty big difference. If you've got a couple sitting in front of you and you can sell them one or the other, don't you make a heck of a lot more on a permanent insurance sale?
Yeah, it would be an order of magnitude more, probably 10 times more that you would make on a permanent sale than a term. I mean, I guess depending on the amount of coverage, but it could be a lot more, suffice it to say.
It's important for people to know as they listen to the pitch.
It's very important for people to know. I'm also careful with that because as much as I do think there is definitely a conflict of interest in the way that insurance brokers are paid. But I think that also causes a problem for people who are receiving insurance advice, where an insurance broker may be giving very good advice about the amount of insurance they need, but the consumer might be skeptical of the advice because they're concerned about the conflict of interest. So I think it's important to be very careful with that one. Mm.
What would be an example of the commission that a broker would earn? If it's a term insurance, it's 10-year, it's $500,000, what's like, is it a dollar or is it $10,000? What's their commission going to be?
It's been a while since I've sold an insurance policy myself, but I think it's around 40 or 50% of the first year premium. So if a term 10 insurance policy for a male costs, say, $25 a month, times 12 is a year, $300. The advisor might make, I don't know, a couple hundred dollars on that term policy.
And a couple thousand on a permanent insurance.
Exactly. That's correct. Yeah. A few thousand on the permanent insurance.
Does the insurance company matter? I know when we talk about, property insurance and auto insurance, there's a whole bunch of benefits that a broker might illuminate in terms of, dealing with this insurance company versus that insurance company. Is there any nuance when it comes to life insurance on who your insurance is actually with outside of the broker?
It's a really important question, and there are nuances. There are small features that different insurers will have on their policies. An example might be the ability to convert to a permanent policy or to convert to a longer-term policy within a set period of time. Those time frames where conversion is allowed can differ with various insurance companies. And little details like that can be important depending on the situation. One issue that I see sometimes is that people will price shop insurance because it's fairly easy information to find. And a policy that might have slightly better features for your situation may cost a couple of extra dollars per month. And again, consumers will be skeptical of an insurance advisor saying this policy has features that will be beneficial to you. They may be skeptical because the price is higher. But in some cases, those extra features can actually be beneficial.
Just briefly here, disability insurance, when does that make sense? It's not cheap. It can be a couple hundred bucks a month, depending on how much income you're trying to replace.
Yeah, so I think anyone that has a relatively high income, group disability will often have a cap on it. So that's one case. Another case is people who are in highly specialized fields, obviously like somebody like a physician, maybe an accountant, other professionals like that. Group disability will often have what's called a 2-year own occupation clause, which means that it will cover you if you're not able to perform the duties of your own current occupation. So if that's an accountant, accounting, a doctor, doctoring, that's not a word.
It's a word. You just made it up. Congratulations. I gave it to you.
Thank you. If they can't go back to their actual job, then the insurance policy will pay. But if they can go back to doing something else other than their own occupation after years, then the insurance company may stop paying. If you purchase your own private disability policy, you can purchase one that will pay if you can't go back to your own occupation until age 65.
Right. Really worth us investing some of our intellectual capacity in understanding insurance. Benjamin, thank you for your time.
Thanks, Bruce.
Benjamin Felix is an associate portfolio manager with PW Capital. He blogs at Common Sense Investing, and he was here to talk to us about insurance, life insurance in particular.